Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Last week, 19 people got to meet someone special. It is not what you think. Those 19 people experienced a heart attack somewhere in Northumberland County. But thanks to the paramedics, they were able to attend a ceremony bringing together the lifesavers and the patients. The 9th annual Survivors Night ceremony was held at the Coburg Lions Center. The first responders and those they saved were recognized through the Lightning Bolt Awards. On today's show, you will meet one of the recipients, County Paramedic Matthew Rollwagon. He will share the story behind his award. You will also hear from his boss, Northumberland Paramedics Chief Susan Brown. Together, they will talk about this emotional night as survivors and responders were reunited. I'm so pleased to have with me today Northumberland Paramedics Chief Susan Brown and County Paramedic Matthew Rollwagon. Welcome both to Consider This Northumberland.
Thanks, Robert. Hello. Thanks for having us.
For those who might not know what the Survival Night Ceremony is, Susan, would you describe it for us, please?
Yes, for sure. So, Robert, I always like to say it's a magical night filled with lots of hugs and happy tears. Annually, what we do is we bring together survivors that we have come across and saved in the previous year. There that evening with us are the paramedics, the communications officers, firefighters, police officers, anyone really that was involved in the happy survival story of those people in the previous year.
How long has this been taking place?
So this was the 9th year. So we're excited that next year will be the 10th year. So for 9 years, we've been celebrating.
Now, you bring all these people together, but what actually happens? Can you describe the ceremony for us, please?
Yeah, for sure. So what we do is we kind of do a summary story of what happened for each one of our survivors that we're celebrating in that year. We have a short story that talks about and takes them through what happened that day, their day. And then at that point in time, we ask the communications officer that was involved in that call. We asked the paramedic involved in the call and the firefighter involved in the call to come forward to the stage. They receive a lightning bolt, which is the symbol of the defibrillation that may have been involved in that call. And then a coin, again, survivor coin, and a certificate outlining that successful story. If that survivor's there in the audience, they come up and that's where the big hugs and tears, happy tears come in.
Why is it important to reconnect survivors with paramedics?
Yeah, great question. So, I think there's a couple of reasons. The big first one is to celebrate the success. And we hear about the chain of survival. So the big thing is, recognizing a cardiac arrest out in the community, starting CPR immediately, the defib, advanced life support, and post-cardiac arrest. So I think it's an opportunity for us to educate and celebrate the successes to that chain of survival. The next one is, collaboration and closure with all our allied services and the survivor and the families that night. You know, a lot of times, a lot of things happen, rush, we're getting to the scene, patient care is, happening in front of them, CPR, we're whisking the people out into the ambulance and taking them off to the hospital with really no closure with the family that night, with the survivor. And then a lot of times, paramedics and firefighters, communications office go on to the next call with really no closure. What happened? What is the outcome of that call? So it really gives us great closure for that. And I think, probably the last one, Robert, I'd say it's a chance to celebrate our successes together. We all know, emergency first responders is such a stressful job. They're busy. And it really gives us a chance to kind of slow down. Let's celebrate together have that closure with the family and the survivor.
Before I bring Matthew into the conversation, I'd just like to telescope back out a little bit. And would you be kind enough to explain the services provided by paramedics in Northumberland?
Wow. So we kind of have two different departments now, but the 911 side, you know, the lights and siren, it's any life-threatening call, anytime somebody needs medical care. So in this instance, we're talking about defibrillation. A lot of times we're talking about intubation, you know, putting a breathing tube into someone's lungs to help them breathe. We talk about intravenous, starting up IV, and being able to provide medications to the patient, to their heart. All these things are trying to start their breathing and to start their heart over again. And if we can't, then what we do is, you know, we do the manual compressions to push that oxygen around and get the heart pumping. And or we breathe for them. We ventilate them. So as far as this night and survivor night, that's basically it. But, you know, you'll always see us for traumas and any other, you know, medical care that's out there in the community.
I also am aware that you provide additional services as well to people who are at home and need attention. Could you just talk a little bit about that side of it as well, just to give us a full picture?
Yeah, for sure. So we've started a community paramedicine program. It's a program that's across the province. And what we do is we bring care to home. And a lot of it is seniors care. So keeping seniors safe at home for as long as we possibly can. Vital signs, you know, check-ins, making sure they're okay. We assist them with some medications, education again, you know, just keeping an eye on them. Prevention is the key to our community paramedic program. How do we keep people safe and prevent them from ever getting really, really sick where they might need the 911? Let's look at, you know, diagnosing early.
You mentioned the lights and sirens side. How many calls do you respond to annually?
Yeah, so we're usually right around that 25,000 calls per year that for service that we respond to.
And when somebody calls 911 with a medical emergency, can you describe the process that happens and the individuals that are involved to answer that call?
Yeah, so they would, if they called 911, the first thing they'll get will be police, fire, ambulance. They get sent through to our ambulance dispatch. They are actually through Lindsay Central Communication Center in Lindsay, and they're responsible for calls through Northumberland, Peterborough, Halliburton, and Kawartha. So once the call goes into a call taker at Lindsay Communication Center, they'll push it over to the dispatcher. At that time, the dispatcher will take the information on their screen and then will page out a paramedic through all those services to the specific base or call them on a radio and say, you know, I have a priority four call for you, you know, you are the closest ambulance, and then provide them the details and the address where they're responding to. At that point in time, the paramedics take the call, and you know, with his lights and sirens, they respond effectively and efficiently to that call, and then the treatment starts.
If an ambulance is not available, what happens?
Yeah, so there would be the next closest ambulance. So one of the neat things in Ontario is what's called seamless coverage, and so it's the closest ambulance, whether it's from, you know, Northumberland, whether it's from Peterborough, you know, Halliburton, Kawartha, Durham, Hastings, anyone, whatever ambulance is the closest ambulance will receive that call. And then they can update it. So maybe they're the closest then, but maybe, you know, a Northumberland paramedic, you know, clears the hospital and then they become. So it's a good seamless coverage system for us.
Matthew, I'd like to bring you into the conversation and learn a little bit about you. How long have you been doing this?
I'm in my 20th year as a paramedic.
Can you describe what a typical day is like for you?
Yeah, I think so. In the last year and a half, I've been working out of Coburg, and Coburg is, I believe, the busiest station in Northumberland County. So the typical day here is we start the day, go out and get some coffee, and then or bring in my coffee in the morning and check the truck. And then basically, usually within the first 5 minutes to 20 minutes, we're out responding to some sort of call, whether it be a code four call or covering another base where a call's gone. And then we are out and about through the community doing calls, going to the hospital, coming back to the base, waiting for the next call. And yeah, and the days are very busy here, so they seem to go by pretty fast since I've come to Coburg.
You mentioned that you came to Coburg recently. In comparison to the other places across the county where you've worked, what are the differences you see by work besides being busy? Is it like in Coburg? What are you dealing with that's different? What kinds of calls do you get?
Before this, when I first started in Northumberland, with Northumberland Paramedics in 2016, I worked for 2 years up in Campbellford. So you can imagine the difference between Coburg and Campbellford. Campbellford being more rural, a longer distance to drive to respond to calls, and then you have a longer time in the ambulance with the patient going back to Campbellford Hospital on average. So coming to Coburg, the comparison would be most of the calls are closer to Coburg, though we do go and cover all of the bases. Like Susan was talking about, the coverage is like countywide. So I could be starting my day in Coburg and I could also go to Port Hope, Brighton, Colborne, Roseneath, and Campbellford all in the same shift. I could hit all of those towns depending on what coverage was required. So you can imagine putting a lot of kilometers in the truck driving around. But also, the typical calls in Coburg are nursing home calls, retirement home calls, a lot of elderly people who need assistance after the most common call, I'd say, is a fall. A lot of people fall in their residences and require lifting, and they're often injured as well. So we can get them up to the hospital for assessment. And then you have all of the other calls from pediatric calls, young children that have accidents happen, or medical emergencies in schools or at home, right up through all the age groups. And there's quite a variety of calls here in Coburg.
How do you deal with seeing people who are in pain or are suffering or experiencing trauma?
Yeah, that's something. That's something that every paramedic has to eventually, come to grips with. I know that I can speak for myself. I have a good support group. I have a lot of wonderful friends that are paramedics as well, so they can empathize with me. I have a wonderful family that's very supportive. I have an extended friend group that I can also kind of escape the paramedic thing, like my friends I've known since I was a child, and I'm very fortunate enough to have those people still in my life. And so that's part of it, is having a good support group. I'd say that's probably the number one way that I deal with it. I'm able to communicate with all of them, and they, don't make me feel shame or anything like that when I express how I feel. So that's really good. And then I also just, dealing with the calls. I think the training that I received in schooling through primary care paramedic to advanced care paramedic, they prepare you for all the different things that you're about to see or you could see. So basically, you come out and you know what to do when a certain situation arises, So it's kind of like you turn yourself on. You get to a call and you respond appropriately. You know what kind of standing orders you have to do. And on the personal side of things, seeing people that are having the worst day of their life, whether it be someone who's hurt themselves or someone who's losing a family member or something like that, like I feel like those things are difficult to deal with. And people that work with me know I'm an emotional person. So I've cried, I've shed tears at work, and I'm not ashamed to say that. And that's been met with a lot of support, and it's wonderful. So,
How do you relax from such an incredibly stressful job?
I think I have hobbies. I'm involved in some sports. I play some hockey, I snowboard. I always keep active. I try to exercise almost every day. Like, since I have an early start time, I choose to get up before work and go and do a workout down in my basement to get my day started on the right foot. So all that stuff, like, it's not considered relaxing, but I think it is because it prepares me for the day, and then it also wears me out. So when I get home and I've got two children at home, two little boys that are quite a handful right now, and they're growing up so fast. They're 9 and 10 now, and I relax with them, and that's a wonderful, like, to come home and see their two faces. It's the best ever,
Do you have any guilty pleasures?
Guilty pleasures. Oh man. Throughout my life, I've had a lot of habits that I've like kicked, which is wonderful. Like I'm 44 years old now, so I have my focuses are on my family right now, and my guilty pleasures would, I love to read. It's hilarious. It sounds lame saying it, but like I'm always reading. Like, reading is something I do like every single day. what else do I do? Guilty pleasures. I love going for beers with my buddies. Like I just went for beers the other day with another paramedic that works here. And we sat there for like 3 hours and just talked and talked and talked. And it felt so good, you know, leaving that pub and just being like, you know, big hug and like, we'll see you around. Hope you're doing well, right? Stay in touch.
Now you received a Lightning Award. Can you by telling us what does it recognize in your mind? What is being honored when you receive it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so over the years, I've been fortunate enough to have been involved in many resuscitations that have been successful, which is wonderful. Just knowing that, like, and I've worked in some busy areas, so I've experienced this before. And every time it really means something, you know, I think it cements that I've chosen the right career for me. It's like you are good at what you do and you're making a difference. And that's something like that really is important, I believe, like, because a lot of people go to work every day and they don't feel like they're making a difference, you know, and I'm so fortunate to be able to have that feeling, you know, especially after the Lightning Bolt ceremony, I met two gentlemen that I was part of the team that brought them back to life. And that was just such an incredible thing to meet these guys and really like talk to them and see the emotion on their face. And it was just incredible. So I have those awards that we were given, and it's something I'll have for, you know, the rest of my life.
Now, is it possible for you to share maybe a story about someone you helped?
Yeah. So with regards to the gentleman that I met, for example, we'll talk about them. These two men were in very different circumstances. I'll talk about the one gentleman who we went to his house and he was having chest pain. So we were talking to him. He was in a lot of distress, lying on his bed. And my partner at the time, Josh, he and I were, you know, going through the motions of getting the cardiac monitor on. We could tell right away that he was very sick. Like he was showing the pale, the sweaty, the clutching his chest. He was in a lot of discomfort and he knew he had the feeling of impending doom, you know. So we were trying to be calm and I was speaking to him calmly. And we did the test that confirmed that he was having a heart attack. And I said to him, I was like, okay, sir, I want you to know right now something. You're having a heart attack. And he was like, okay, I'm having a heart attack. And I was trying to prepare him for the next few steps of the call, which was like, I'm going to put an IV in and I'm going to put these pads on your chest. So if your heart rhythm should change, we'll be able to respond to it immediately. And he was like, listen, whatever you're going to do, do it right now. And he used a nice curse word in there too. He's like, you better hurry. And I was like, I will, sir, but we have to. And immediately that's when he went unconscious right in front of us. And we were able to shock his heart within seconds of it going into that abnormal rhythm and then start CPR. And he lost his pulse and he stopped breathing and we started CPR right away. And probably within 2 minutes, his heart was beating again, 2 or 3 minutes. And he woke up and he looked at us and he was like, it feels like some monkey was just bumping on my chest. And I was like, that's Josh right beside you. And he looked over and he smiled and you could tell it was like such an amazing experience to see someone go from talking to being vital signs absent and then talking again and pretty much right away making a joke. And it was just, he's such an incredible character, that gentleman. And then we ended up bringing him up to Peterborough where he had the appropriate surgery done. And I got to meet him the other day and he continued with the jokes and it was wonderful, you know.
What is it like when you meet them again at the awards ceremony to have gone through all of that experience and then to suddenly meet them again and talk to them again?
Yeah, it was great. It's funny. For that whole year that's passed since the event happened, because it happened in 2023, I had an image in my mind of what these men look like, you know? And a year later, and I go and I meet them and I'm like, I think that's him, but he looked different than I thought, you know? And then all of a sudden I went up to him and shook his hand and I'm like, no, this is the guy, you know? And it's like big smiles. And I felt like I couldn't help but have like the biggest smile on my face, you know? And it just feels so like wholesome and good. And then hearing him speak and the jokes and seeing his partner there and having like her come over and give me a big hug and be so thankful. It's just, it's very emotional, you know, like it's wonderful. I didn't feel overly like, like I wanted to cry or anything, but I just felt this, like, you know, this, like, wow, this is a moment, you know, especially to meet with both of these men. I felt so fortunate to be a part of the team that got to help these two guys.
Chief, there were 95 first responders who received Lightning Bolt awards at a recent ceremony. That seems like a lot. How come so many?
Yeah, I'm going to say the great work of, you know, of the our paramedics, the communications officers, fire department, etc. We had 19 survivors for 2023. So an increase. And you know what? A lot of it is the chain of survival we talk about, you know, and credit to some of those situations. You know, citizens did the recognition. They called for 911. They started the compressions. You know, if there's a defib on site, getting the defib and applying it. And then, you know, paramedics, fire coming and, you know, either applying the defib or continuing the care. And, you know, we can't stress enough. The chain of survival is so, so important in these situations. And yeah, I think the group, the success of the group.
How many paramedics does the county have?
I think we're probably around 130. That always waxes and wanes a little bit, just depending on, you know, life, et cetera. But we're about 130 paramedics.
So do people receive multiple Lightning Bolt awards for the different cases?
Yeah. So I think, and I'll let Matt correct me if I'm wrong, I think I shook Matt's hand 4 to 6 times that night. Yeah. So they can be involved in many saves. And as Matt said, lucky enough to be, you know, working out at Coburg, and, you know, and that's the thing, right? Sometimes it's just being in the right place at the right time. Same with delivering babies, right? Like, if someone can go their whole 20 years and never deliver a baby, others could deliver 10. But you know what? I'll have to say hats off to Matt. He's one of our big time success stories and has lots of pins, and he does a great job.
Now, are there some notable other stories from this long list that you would like to share?
Yeah, for sure. I know some of the medics that have had a lot of saves, Chris Hopkins and James Sanziewicz. And of course, the partners, because like Matthew said, you know, he had Josh there on this one call. And so it was great. We had 4 of the survivors show up that night. Sometimes, as Matt said, it's very emotional and difficult. So we've had some other survivors that were, tell your people, thank you. We really appreciate everything they've done for them, but it's just a little stressful to attend. And you know what? That's part of it too. We still share their story without utilizing names, but it's all about that chain of survival and all of our allied agencies coming together collaboratively and sharing in that success.
Matthew, you referenced this a bit in one of your answers, but I'd like to come back to it for just a second. And that's the difference between the number of calls for service or the types of calls between rural and urban municipalities. Can you maybe draw some sharper contrasts between the types of things that you maybe find that you're being called to in a rural area versus an urban area like Camelford, Brighton, Coburg, or Port Hope?
Yeah, I found that when working in a rural area, you're doing most of your calls at residences. And that means going into like houses. So you're driving a bit and you're going to like a detached house or whatever, a farmhouse. So you're dealing with that, the dynamic of bringing your stretcher in through like the driveway to the house. And, you know, a certain type of people live in these residences. Like, they're high functioning. Usually they are taking care of a house. Whereas and in Campbellford also, there is, I believe, some apartments there and maybe a long-term care home or two, Island Park and the other one near the hospital. So there's that. But in the rural area, in the urban area, there's many apartment buildings. So you're navigating apartments and elevators. You're doing unit numbers and different things like that. Also, there's so many long-term care homes here in Coburg, as well as retirement homes. So the population age, I believe, is much higher in Coburg. So we're doing a lot of medical emergencies associated with the older population. And like I said before, a lot of falls. A lot of people falling.
Chief, one of the areas that can be problematic is the offloading times at hospitals. In your report to County Council in April of this year, you said that you often go beyond the 30 minutes acceptable limit. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, for sure. So the industry standard is that by the time you get to the hospital, you know, do your triage report, move your patient to a bed, that usually takes anywhere between 20 and 30 minutes. But in those reports to counsel is beyond that time. So there's times in that, you know, maybe we're in an hour, 1 hour offload, 60 minutes of offload. And within those reports, it was how many hours that we spend sometimes in that offload delay. And that's problematic because that keeps us from responding to the community, that, you know, decreases our car count or our availability to respond to other life-threatening emergencies out in the community.
Now, you gave that report in April. Has it changed at all since you gave the report?
So what we had was a little bit of what's called dedicated offload nursing funding. It was a provincial funding. We did receive some, not all of what we were hoping to. So it has decreased somewhat. But my concern, and always my concern, is, you know, if you don't have that support and that, you know, the extra help at the hospital, will it go back up again?
So then what is being done to change that?
Yeah, so we're doing everything we can within the service. What we do is, you know, a fit to sit program. So if we bring somebody in who's maybe a lower acuity level, not really that sick or not as sick as some of the people in the emergency room, in the beds, what we do is we'll offload them to the waiting room. And this is really important because I think hospitals need to triage based on what's come in with them, right? Some will come in by paramedics, but others will walk in. And they're always trying to figure out who's the sickest of the people and trying to help them quickly. So we do the fit to sit program. We continue to request offload nursing funding. And we try to ensure that, you know, we have our vehicles in the most appropriate places. So as Matt has said, Coburg tends to be the higher call volume. So we try and move our vehicles so that there's always a vehicle in Coburg.
Matt, you've done this for many years. Does the demands of your job change from year to year? And what sort of trends are you seeing?
Yeah, I feel like I came from, before I came to Northumberland County, I worked in the region of Peel for 12 years. So I was mostly working in Brampton and Mississauga. In those years that I worked there, I watched the call number, like the call volume, like skyrocket. I watched the hospitals fill up and the wait times. I sometimes would spend half my shift or more just in the emergency department with a patient on the stretcher due to the call volume and the load on the emergency departments in Brampton and Mississauga. Since I came to Northumberland, I feel like it's getting steadily busier as the years have gone. So it's been since 2016. I've definitely noticed the call volume almost year on year get higher and higher each time. So yeah, I don't mind it because it makes the day go fast, but it does show something's happening with the population increase as well as awareness of 911 and the appropriate use of 911 and stuff like that. I feel like you can see it's becoming busier.
Chief, how about you? What are some of the trends you're seeing locally?
Yeah, I think definitely the call volume and the usage of the 911 system. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, we call in the emergency, right? What are the appropriate times to call 911? And the healthcare system in general, you know, with family physicians decreased, I think it really takes a community to really address the situation. I think here, like I've said, we've done the offload nursing funding. We've done the fit to sit. I think the other big thing is collaboration. And in this one, or maybe I would say the OHTN, the Ontario Health Team Network. How do we work together? How do we get those people who maybe don't have a primary care physician? How do we get those unattached people attached so that they can get in to see their family practitioner, you know, maybe not 911 and not going to the hospitals, but I think we have to ensure that we support people and give them other options so that they can feel safe and that they are getting the treatment they need.
Chief, you're going to be doing budgets very, very soon if you're not doing it already. What issues do you feel the county needs to address in the upcoming budget deliberations related to paramedics?
So I think it's the continued look and understanding of the statistics. So what is our call volume? What is the usage of ambulances, our coverage? You know, how can we get our people out of the hospital and support? So of course, you know, it's staffing, it's vehicles. And I think the other big proponent of, and you touched on it, was a community paramedicine program, sustainable funding so that program can continue. You've heard Matt say a lot of them are falls. And again, it comes back to prevention. How can we stop that fall from ever taking place? Can we, help them through our community paramedic program? Because we know a fall is a trip to the hospital, potentially a fractured hip, care at the hospital. Maybe they have to go to ICU. All that takes money, let alone, the pain for the patient, the hardship on the family and the caregivers. So, again, caregiving and helping community paramedicine is an amazing program and works so well with the 911 side because we can identify them together.
Matt, does saving lives ever get mundane? Does it ever just become another day at the office?
That's funny you say that. I don't feel like the job is saving lives. Like, I feel like we go out there and we just show up and are a team of people that are prepared for almost anything. And we help people that aren't prepared or are unable to cope with whatever the incidents, like of all severities, from something very mild to very severe. And I enjoy it. Like, I just enjoy going to work. I know that when I'm showing up, the people that I'm showing up for are looking to me for support. And that really aligns with who I am as a person. And it's like, it seems like it's a natural thing for me. I really enjoy it. It's not many people can say that they make a difference, like I said earlier, in on a day-to-day basis at work, So I don't get bored. I love the freedom of the job. As a paramedic, we drive around independently in the ambulance, usually with somebody who has similar values and sees the world in a similar way. So you really bond with the person you're working with throughout the day, and you have a lot of laughs and you're there for each other. And it's just like, it's a great job. Like, I can't complain one bit. I'm so lucky to have found this career for myself. And yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Chief, what's next? What should people be looking for in the upcoming days and weeks and months from the paramedic department at the county?
Yeah, so I think, if I look at prevention, we've got the influenza, get the flu shot, COVID, help protect yourself and help protect some of the people with lower immunity, right? I think the big thing is, we're going to come into the winter season. So being prepared that way for the immunizations. I think being prepared with, I don't want to say that S word, the snow and the ice, but looking and being prepared for the winter driving, slow down. Help us help everyone out there. I think, go get a class on CPR, help the people in the community. And I think, just to be there and listen when we have our requests, whether it's, some of the budgeting, the funding, and even provincial healthcare, that can help us, because healthcare in and of itself, whether it's a hospital, paramedics, we're all in it together to help you. So I guess that would be my big message. Help us help you.
Susan Brown, Matthew Rowagen, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Robert.
That was Northumberland Paramedics Chief Susan Brown and County Paramedic Matthew Rowagen. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me. And I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at ConsiderThisNorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at ConsiderThis. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share.
And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.